One clear day aloft, he wrote a message and dispatched it by paper express, wrapping it around a musket ball, attaching that to a ring, and dropping it down a mooring line to a waiting messenger. Enemy apparently still in camp, about 3 miles west of Fredericksburg. Also, large camp about 8 miles south by west, largest, is about 15 miles south of Fredericksburg. Smaller one east by south. Major General Daniel Butterfield, the new Union Chief of Staff, sarcastically thanked the professor for his interesting report. But he asked, "What do you consider a large camp? And what a small one? How many men?" Large and small meant nothing. Generals wanted their spy in the sky to know the difference between company and regiment, brigade and division. Professor Lowe and the Army were still learning. The French had used balloons for battlefield observation more than 60 years before. But military bureaucrats in America balked at innovation in weapons, tactics, and technology. To them, manned flight was still a dollar-a-ride fairground novelty. Lowe, a tall, stage-handsome, one-time shoemaker's apprentice from New Hampshire, had flown 900 miles from Cincinnati deep into the Carolinas, arriving the day Fort Sumter surrendered, and nearly being lynched on suspicion of spying for the Union. Spying was not what he was doing, but it was what he was thinking. 2 months later, he finally got past federal bureaucrats to demonstrate his balloon's potential to Lincoln himself. To the president, Lowe sent the first telegram from an airship on June 18, 1961. He devised a portable machine that used scrap iron and sulfuric acid to create hydrogen to inflate his tightly sewn, gaudily painted silk balloons in the field. He operated a balloon from a barge on the Potomac, which thus became the nation's first aircraft carrier. On the peninsula below Richmond in 1862, one Union general asserted that the professor's reconnaissance had saved the Army at the Battle of Fair Oaks. Brigadier General Fitz John Porter, who went up for a first-hand look, sailed over Confederate lines and provided for the rebels some target practice, before luckily drifting back to safety. A visiting German lieutenant, Count Ferdinand von Zeppelin, took a ride, found it fascinating, and decided that lighter-than-air craft had a promising future. The Confederates tried to match Professor Lowe's fleet, but could patch together only one balloon from silk dresses, donated by the ladies of Dixie, and it soon dropped into Yankee hands. Along the Rappahannock in the winter of 1862-63, Lowe learned to gauge the size of Confederate camps by counting their tents and fires, comparing them to known quantities on the federal side of the river. Staff officers had gone aloft with him during the Battle of Fredericksburg, where the Confederates had smashed wave after wave of Union infantry in December. After that, Lowe watched the hungry Southern Army as it dug in and waited for the next, inevitable Union attempt to cross the Rappahannock toward Richmond. Sometimes, on windless days, he could steady his scope on the rim of his basket and fix a closer eye than rebel officers could keep on their unsuspecting soldiers. In the gray late afternoon, a private from Mississippi slipped toward the bank of the quiet river. Behind him, a shell-pocked field cut by roads and ravines rose gently toward a stone wall, at the foot of a ridge overlooking the ruined town of Fredericksburg. Scattered across that mile of field, wooden slabs marked the shallow graves of Union soldiers. Already the winter had washed away some of the loose clay, and here a hand clutched upward, there a skull grinned out of the earth. The soldier looked away from these as he passed by. Beside the river, he whistled quick and loud. Looking up and downstream, he slid a crude toy boat into the water. Before he let it go, he loaded it with a parcel, 3 pounds of Virginia tobacco. He set the paper sail mounted on the stick that made a mast, gave the craft a shove, and waited. The gray was deepening when he saw the little boat again, angling past him to touch the ground. He caught it, pulled off the sail, and held it up in the faint light. He could barely make out the nameplate of the New York Tribune.